Let's go.
Well, April 9th to the 12th, Tim, is very important to me and to my grandfather Palo Mountain, Vimy Ridge. The French and the English tried to take it 6 or 7 years. How many? I know you read up on it. I asked you to read it.
Yeah, I think it was like 3 years they tried to take it, and the French lost 150,000 men, dead or wounded. And remember, the French soldiers revolted.
Yeah, like, well, they didn't want to. They couldn't. The Germans were up on top of the ridge, and nobody could talk. And General Curry was the guy, and they tried to. And
just so people that might not know, this was in World War One, and the Germans were on a really super high ridge that looked out like right from sea to sea almost.
Well, it was a change of the war.
And they couldn't, and the Allies couldn't move because the Germans could see them and then would shell them or whatever. So the French tried to take it. I think they tried for like 2 years.
And the English.
And the English. 150,000 Frenchmen died. And so just to give you some perspective, that's the population of like Greater Sudbury or Kelowna that died. And then in Canada, the British decided that the Canadians were going to take it. And it was the first time that the Canadians it was four divisions that they fought.
100,000.
That they fought together. And so because I think they thought, well, let the Canadians give it a try.
Yeah. And General Curry, he would not do till he trained them. They had a creeping, I think they call it creeping artillery, and they were absolutely fantastic. They took it in 3 days. They had close to 4,000 casualties of people getting killed. And Tim, I have to say something. In the paper, in The Sun, which is right wing, there was one article, and you know, a lot of people that say, why were you fired? And I was fired. Because nobody cares. I mean, Candice Malcolm, she wrote about it, and she was the only one that had it and you know, that's what got me. I think one of the bad things about me, or one of the things when I went over there, and I saw all these graves, graves and looked like miles long.
You and I went over because CBC was doing a show on called Who Do You Think You Are? And your grandfather was over there, and we learned about your grandfather, and that he was, what happened was that the English and the Canadians dug tunnels.
That's true.
And they dug tunnels because the Germans could see what was going on. If they saw 100,000 men moving up, they would have known that there was an attack coming. So Canadians would move up at night, and they would hide in these tunnels. They were just these small, cramped little tunnels, and waiting for the.
I could have done that.
Waiting for the day, and your grandfather was there, but he was wounded before.
He had a kidney infection.
He was wounded, and he got a staph infection from the wounds. And I looked it up, and they said that almost it was kind of like the Civil War, where as many soldiers died of infection.
Yeah,
and because they're in
finally
the trenches,
killed him,
and then eventually he was in the tunnel, but they had to send him back because they said his eyes and
couldn't see,
and they had to send him back, and he came back.
He turned up though. Remember the guy took us around and everything.
Yeah,
he's your grandfather stood right there, grandfather Palamount. But anyhow, I went over there. And I saw what they went through. Man, that must have been something.
Yeah, and a quick funny story was we went over there, and again, we were working with CBC, and they had a guy that what they call a fixer. So he was the kind of guy that would drive around, and if we needed anything or if a camera broke, he was the guy to fix it. But he was driving us around as well, and so he was English. We were over in France, but he was English, and he said, "So what does your dad do?"
Oh, a couple of buses drove up, I remember.
Right.
And they're all Canadian kids.
Right. So, but this guy that was with us, he says, what does your dad do? And I said, oh, he's on Hockey Night in Canada. And he goes, oh, hockey. He goes, that's like soccer to us, right? And I said, yep. And he goes, what's your dad do? I says, well, he commentates. I said, he, you know, does a thing called Coach's Corner. So we were in Vimy Ridge, and it really is, the monument is unbelievable.
Unbelievable, it is.
So we're sitting there, and we were all by ourselves. There was nobody there when we were there.
It was unbelievable that we walked up. There wasn't anybody there.
No.
Unbelievable.
So just as we were leaving, two buses pulled up, and they were from mostly Canadian. They were all Canadians, right?
Because
Canadians
go.
So they all came out, and they're all excited to see you, and they were asking for autographs. So the guy was looking, and goes, this fixer from England goes, "Well, boy," he says, "your dad really is famous." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "So what does he do again?" I says, "Well, he's on Hockey Night in Canada." He goes, "Well, how long does he talk for? Like, is it an hour?" I go, "Well, he's 7 minutes." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "How many days is he on?" I go, "Once." He goes, "Wait a minute. He's on once a week for 7 minutes, and he's this popular." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, it must be a hell of a 7 minutes."
Well, it was a good 7 minutes for a while.
Yeah.
But I you know, a lot of people asked, well, like, why didn't you just keep your mouth shut? You know what I was making, Tim? I never told you before. I'm making $1 million. All I had to do was keep my mouth shut. But really, what bothered me was to think that nobody cared. Nobody cared. And, you know, nobody cares now. Really, I mean, the Vimy Ridge, Candice put it in.
Yeah.
And then I was driving down and I saw nobody wearing a poppy. It was a bad combo for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you never ever put it in your books or anything, but CBC did come to you at one time and said they were not too happy with.
When I was mentioning the soldiers.
When you mentioned the soldiers, because they were getting some complaints that people were saying it was glorifying the militaristic machine.
Oh, that's right, too. I forgot about that. Yeah. And I said to them, okay, I'll stop speaking this. I will stop speaking about the. But I'm going to say, you told me to stop. Yeah. And he goes, "Oh, well, never mind. Never mind. Anyhow, April 9th. To the 12th, Vimy Ridge. That's a lot of people say glorifying the war, but it made Canada, and you could almost see General Curry never got the credit he deserved. He would not do anything till we were ready, and we took it in 3 days, and the English and the French tried to take it for 6 years, I think they tried.
The war wasn't that long. It was like, it was like 3 years or something.
Well, they tried to take it, and they lost a lot of men.
Well, 100,000.
We took it. In 3 days.
3 days, yeah. So, Dad, we did a couple of, I guess last week or the week before, we were doing a story on the fastest hat trick was 21 seconds by Bill Mosianko, and a lot of people said, come on, that's not true. So, confirming again, that's hard to believe. It was true, right?
Yeah, he got, and he said, and you know, I read when I heard that people wanted to hear more about Billy Mosianko, I look up, I didn't know Billy. He was a right winger, and he was a small guy, 5 foot 860 pounds, from Winnipeg. And 1921, I think he was born. He won the Lady Byng. He was an all-star 7 times. He played for the Blackhawks 14 years, 711 games. This is pretty. 258 goals, and in those days, Chicago didn't make the playoffs too many times. He played with Gus Bardner. Gus Bardner, who played for the Toronto Maple Leafs and Chicago. But he played on a line, a great line. It was called the Pony Line. I looked all this up. Max and Doug Bentley, if people remember him. I remember when I was a kid, they had a newsreel of Max, and he was with a bunch of kids and in the puck. And at the end, he was deacon diving with the puck. And the puck was nailed to a stick. I always remember that. He was small. He could fly, and he was from Winnipeg. And after he was through, he bought the first pro team ever in Winnipeg. Winnipeg Warriors. They were first play. The first year they won the championship, he made the Manitoba Hall of Fame, and he's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So I just wanted to Billy Mosianko. And he was he played on the Pony Line. I thought that was great. So I looked it up for all the people in Winnipeg. He was a real Winnipegger. He went back there and lived and bought the first pro team.
So, Dad, I'd just like to mention our sponsor, Spreads.ca, is a First Nations-owned online casino and sportsbook tailored to Canadians. Sign up now and enter the promo Grapes, and they'll match your deposit up to $500. You get 15 spins on the big wheel for some big dough, and you get a $25 free sports bet for your first ones. That's spreads.ca, spreads with an S. So we did pretty good We on the weekend bet on the Leafs, and they beat Ottawa.
Pretty tough not to bet on the Leafs.
And then, but the one thing with this is, this is one of the few Canadian websites that you can bet single games, and then you can bet prop bets. And then you and I were talking, and Marner was in a little bit of a goal scoring streak, so you got like 3-1 that he was going to score last night. Yeah. So we bet on him, and he got a goal. So,
well, as we speak, they're first place overall.
Yeah,
only 16 hits, though. That bothers me. And the other teams always out-hit them. I guess when you have the puck all the time and stuff.
Yeah.
But they,
I think the question, Dad, in the North is the Flames are, this is Sunday morning, so the Flames are like, they're like 6 points back, but Montreal is 3 games on hand. Do the Flames have any chance catching Montreal?
No, I would hate to play Montreal in the playoffs. Carey Price, he's resting now, and he sees they're having a tough time. Carey Price might be ready for that. And he'd say, this is the last time in my career I'll have a shot at the Stanley Cup. And
So you don't think the Flames are going to catch him? You don't think the Flames
are going to? No, listen, they looked pretty good the other night there. But I have to admire Ottawa. No quit, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't quit. They could have rolled over. They were, I think it was 3-0 or something.
Yep.
And they come back, and they don't quit. That D.A. Smith, he's got them going.
Yeah, so I know everybody doesn't want to mention it, but it looks like the way things are shaping up, it looks like first round, it's Montreal, Toronto, first round.
Unless Sutter might get, he did the same thing in L.A. Remember, he did the same the last day of the season, he made the playoffs in L.A., and they won the Cup.
Yeah, but they're, again, 6 points, and Montreal's got 3 games on hand. They didn't pull the trigger quite soon enough, right?
The
other thing, too, is kind of interesting with some of the other divisions quickly is, how about Phoenix? Let's talk to it. They're 1 point out of the playoff spot out of that Central, the West Division, and that's the toughest division, I think.
Yeah, and don't forget Florida. Boy, Florida. Yep. Joel Quenneville's got him going.
Yep.
So Ryan O'Reilly got an OT winner last night. He seems all combani. Bonnie O'Reilly's happy.
Yeah. And the other one is Boston is 4 points ahead of the Flyers. But again, they got 2 games on hand. So it looks
and
like
Canucks, they're coming back. I think they're 8th or 16th. They're coming back.
Yeah.
And they're not that far out. They might all get together and say, let's make those playoffs. And
yeah, they got a couple of games on hand too on Montreal. But we want to make a quick shout out to speaking of Vancouver, Ron Delorme, good friend of yours in Colorado. Oh. He was inducted into the BC Sports Hall of Fame.
I got to be careful what I say here. Boy,
well, we'll talk about Ron. We just want to say congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
We'll talk about him. We'll talk about Ron. And
we should do a story on
him. We'll do a couple of stories. I mean, he played for you in Colorado, and one of the toughest guys.
He was a grand man, and let's keep that there, and we'll talk about Ronnie Delorme, and some of the other guys there. What do I care now? I mean, I can't fire me off this. This is my show.
Right, but we'll talk about Ron and next week. So, Dad, I was looking through the Twitter account, and somebody sent a Twitter feed asking you to talk about one of the guys that you played with for, I think, like 5 years in Rochester, Bronco Horvath.
I think I played. We won. I think 5 years. We won 3 championships and 1 final. I never forgot. The one final we were in Pittsburgh, we were playing, and we lost, I think, I forget. Anyhow, we lost. We won 3 championships. But I remember the funniest thing. On the buses, there's always one guy that Les Duff was the funniest guy, and he'd pick on everybody. Everybody, the bus driver. And so hour after hour on the bus, we used to spend on the bus. And New York Thruway used to have a lot of groundhogs. I suppose they still do. And as the bus had come along, they'd run back to their, on the other side.
But they run kind of funny, too.
They run. Well, they'd falling down and tripping and falling. And if you ever seen a groundhog run, you know what it's like. So we're sitting there, and it's quiet, and we're watching the groundhogs. And Les Duff said, hey, look at that groundhog. He says, look at him running for his hole. He looks like Bronco on a on a breakaway. Well, the whole bus just, and at the end of it, and when everything calmed down, you could hear Bronco say, "Funny Duff, funny, you're a funny man, Duff." And he used to sit up the very front, Bronco Horvath. By the way, he was a pretty good hockey player.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that people, again, he played, you know, he there was the six leagues, so you figure how many centers did they carry in the NHL?
Well, we only carried four, but he played in now let me get this right now, if I got to remember. He played with the Boston Bruins on the Uke line. And the Uke line was Stasiak was on the right wing and Busick was on the left wing. You know, how funny thing is, as we get talking, I think of the time those two guys, we had to be in at 11 o'clock in the Manger Hotel in Boston. It was connected with the Boston Gardens. And I remember I wanted to see a fight. It would come on at about 10:30, quarter to, I forget. My brother and I, Richard, we wanted to see a fight. Johnny Saxon was fighting. I don't think he was fighting Basilio, but he was fighting. We liked Johnny Saxon. And so there was a little bar in the corner, and I remember Milt Schmidt come and stood beside us. Now, it's okay for those two guys to sit in the lobby, or those three guys to stand in the lobby and kid with them, but it wasn't okay for Richard and I. Somehow I got the idea. Anyhow, we got in the bed, and we saw Saxon won anytime.
Yeah, but just to go, but I mean, so in the NHL, they carried four centers, so that's the 20.
Oh, well, they carried.
That would be 24 centers in the National Hockey
League. In the National Hockey League, they carried five defensemen in the National Hockey League. There was six teams. That means in the whole world, there was only 30 defensemen.
Yeah, but Bronco was a center, right?
He was a centerman.
So they only had 24 centers in there. And then one year with you in Rochester, he got 106 points in the American Hockey League and still didn't.
Well, he was never one of the favorite. Oh, I have to tell you a story. I got a whole bunch of stories about it. I have to tell a story about we're in Buffalo Bisons, and we're playing, and I play for Rochester Americans. So we drive up, we'd meet at 4 or 3 o'clock, I forget which, and we drive up and we play the game, and then we drive back again. And there was a terrific snowstorm, terrific. I mean, you couldn't see. And
well, that's right in the snow belt, too.
Oh, boy, it was snow. We come out and you couldn't even see. So we get on the New York Thruway, and we're thumbing along there pretty good. And we're playing Euchre, Jerry Eamon. And I must talk about Jerry Eamon. Jerry Eamon and with myself, I can't think of the other two guys. Anyhow, Jerry just deals the cards, and he's going to turn the card over. What's trump?
Yep.
And, boy, we look up, and we see this Volkswagen right in the middle of the throughway. It is packed. It is stopped.
He stopped because of the snow. He couldn't see, so he stopped.
Couldn't see. Yeah. So the driver pulls it over, and we go in the medium, in the side. And snow is flying. We can't see anything. We're tilted.
Because it, like, if you haven't been on the New York Thruway, there's like a medium and it kind of goes into a little gully. So
yeah.
you must have guys been in like a 45 degree angle.
We were on a 45 degree angle, and Jerry's got his hand on the card, and we're seeing the snow fly up, and we're driving along, and he says, "Spades Trump." I never forgot it was. And the guy had a nerve enough. The driver had the nerve enough.
The Volkswagen.
Bang on the door. We thought it was the police or somebody. And he says, "Nice game, guys. Nice game." And, yeah, the bars were closing. So, anyhow, that was a great story. How did I get? Oh, yeah, Bronco. Yeah. I got to tell this story. But that Phil.
Yeah, you're in.
Phil Watson, yeah. He was sort of a crazy coach for the New York Rangers. And then he was with Buffalo Sabres. If you don't like somebody, I don't know why more people don't pull this.
So Phil Watson was coach, and he was coaching Buffalo Bison.
What he did was it was about 30 seconds to go. Every time a puck was dropped in their end faceoff for a power play, the centerman would just beat the heck out of Bronco.
Out of Bronco, yeah.
Yeah. So he did about three, and next, so he got none to lose because they're going to lose anyhow. Do you understand the faceoff?
So you were saying there was like about two or three minutes to go.
Didn't make any difference.
You were beating them pretty badly. Yeah. And every time there was a face-off.
And he didn't like Bronco. Phil Watson didn't like Bronco.
So every time there was a face-off.
He dropped the puck and just beat the heck right out of him. And after about three, and he's cutting everything. So, and I don't, I tell you the truth, I don't think that our coach, Joe Crozier, liked him either. And he left him out there. So he finally comes to the bench. He's, what are you doing? What are you doing? To Joe Crozier. I can still see him now. And I'm sitting at the end of the bench. He's, what are you doing, Joe? He says, get me out of there. He sent some dummy out there like Jerry. He turned, no offense, Grapes. I think he left him out there until the very end. But I never forgot that. There were so many things that he, and I remember one time I was sitting on the bench. Yeah, sitting on the bench a lot, it seemed. And it was one year I hurt my knee. I must go into that. So he come over. He had a penalty shot. No kidding. Then he come over. And before the penalty shot, he says, what I'm going to do, Grapes, is I'm going to fake to, and he's telling me, I'm going to fake the left. He's going to bite. He's going to come over to the left. And I'm going to go to the right. And I'm going to backhand it in the top corner. He's telling me. And he's going in. By golly, he did it. And he looked at me at the match. And he comes up and everything like that. Boy, I remember what he had. He had a beautiful convertible. Mm-hmm. It was a Lincoln convertible, one of those long ones mm-hmm. with a blue top. I never forgot. I think he hit three to four deer and going back to Port Colborne all the time. And he could really talk like Dracula. Look into my eyes, mm-hmm. he used to say all the time. I don't know if I should say this or not because I don't know what it means, but I'm going to say it anyhow. Yeah. He just finished the shower, and he comes out, and he used to say all the time, Dolly, Dolly, where are you, you big peach guy? And she said, her voice said, I'm here, Brock. And I remember him looking at me. She was waiting outside the door.
Yeah, because that's like after the game in the War Memorial, they would all kind of, the wives were all kind of at the one.
No, this was after practice.
It was after practice.
Yeah, and I don't know what she was doing there. I have to tell you, Jim Pappin, you know, I see those guys. I see that one game they play all the time, and Jim Pappin got the winner. When they won the Stanley Cup, Jimmy Pappin got the goal.
Yep.
He just threw it on net. He used to be one of the guys. When the Kentucky Derby was on, he'd rate the horses and he'd rate the guys, and I remember he'd make fun if somebody got knocked out. The next day in practice, he says, "Okay, guys, three guesses who this is. Two first, two to." And Bronco had an awful injury. He had his elbow moved or something. But it was all split in the head.
What, he got his elbow cut?
I don't know. Yeah, his elbow, it was just terrible cut. And he went out and tried to play like the next game, and it split again. So the doctor came in, and he used to stitch it right up. He'd be sitting there at the bench, they'd stitch you up. And he says, okay, doc, this is Bronco talking. He says, okay, doc, now wait a minute. Just let me get myself.
Just get myself prepared.
Yeah, I'd prepared. So the next day in practice, okay, guys. So, all right, two guesses. Guess who this is?
Yeah, hockey players kind of have a cruel sense of humor.
Oh, if you had a weakness, I wasn't a good skater, right? So Jimmy Pappin went around and he $15,000 claimer, or $25,000, you know, if a guy was really good. So he did everybody in the whole team. And I said to him, Jimmy, you never put me in. He's, It's okay, Grapes. You know those big horses that take the gates out? That's you. Jimmy Pappin was a funny guy. Cruel. I mean, if you had a weakness, you were done.
So, you know, Dad, we were talking about Bronco, and the one year he had, imagine, 106 points in the American Hockey League.
And they only played 60-some games.
Yeah, and he didn't make it to the National Hockey League back. So,
yeah, imagine 106. So, you know, yeah, I have to tell a story about Bronco. I forgot to tell it. And I think he's going for the scoring title with Bobby Hull. It comes down to the final game.
So he's in the NHL this time.
He's in the NHL. He's playing for the Boston Bruins, the Uke Line. And Bobby Hull and him are tied. And he gets really creamed. And he tells me this story that the wives used to sit up way up high, I guess, in those days. And he says, I'm knocked out. And he says, I'm not cold. And he says, I wake up and I look up way up high, and there's Dolly. There's my wife. She says she couldn't care less. She's talking, yapping away. And I think what happened is they took him to the hospital. He didn't want to go to the hospital. And Bobby Hall got a couple of cysts or something and won the scoring title. And he could have been the one guy. 1 year he could have won the scoring title. And
it's amazing back then, like you went that high, and then you get something happened. They didn't like you, and then they put you in the American Hockey League.
Well, must talk about Billy Sweeney. Billy Sweeney won the scoring title 3 years in a row in the American League and never got a sniff. And when you got in the bad books, you were in the bad books. I was in the bad books, and because I played baseball and I shouldn't have. And if you got in the bad books, you were done. Yeah. You were finished. And there's the guy got 100. Jerry Heeman, he went up to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Papin went up, and their whole power play was our power play we had in Rochester.
So just a quick funny story, just how things connect, how small the world of hockey was back then. So when Bronco had 106 points, the only guy that had more points than him was a player named Art Stratton. And Art, and then you became coach of the Rochester Americans a few years later, about 4 or 5 years later. And you got Art, and he was captain. You made him captain of the team.
I made him captain. I thought he'd be a great coach.
So I remember you telling me the story. One day, you could see the players were kind of cooling him, and they were...
Yeah, and they never... But let me first explain how hockey players, after a game, what they used to do. They'd have a few beers, a few too many. Then they'd go to Chinese food, and they'd order, chow mein, chop suey. And what they do, they split it. They split
everybody,
it.
Yeah, but you do
everybody
it.
Everybody have it. And so I could see that the players didn't like Art Stratton. I said, and he would never give anybody any problems. He was leading scorer.
He was the captain.
You don't like your captain. So Rod Graham from Kingston, he was sort of like, he was like Schmatze. He was like the straw boss. If you had any problems, you went to him. So I went to him. I said, Rod, what's going on here? I said, you got the captain. You got Art Stratton. I said, why don't you like him? He says, he ate all the shrimp. I said, well, that's it. Now I know why you don't like him.
So he ordered sweet and sour shrimp. He didn't share.
He took all the shrimp and ate them all and didn't share. And that's why the players didn't like him. They ate all the shrimp. And I guess in those days, when you do something like that, they never forgot. And I thought he'd be a good coach. And you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, let me tell you about that. I wanted him to be the coach, and because he was good. He was really good.
Man, I always remember the one guy would bring us a sign to the War Memorial. Hockey is an art.
And he was an art. He would be fantastic in today's hockey. Yeah. He'd have been perfect. So anyhow, I had him as the coach, and everything was all set. And he wanted another $500, and it just ticked the owners off, and he lost out in the job. I think he would have been a great coach. I really do. But Art Stratton, I never forgot. And the reason they didn't like him was because he ate all the shrimp. Yeah, I Tim, I'd like to say something more about the April 9th and Vimy Ridge, and we started it, and my grandfather Palo Mountain was in it, and we're in trying to be in it anyhow, with his eyes closed, and it's really something. Candice Malcolm was the only person that had it in the paper, and we lend, and
you put it up on your Twitter feed again, because this is Sunday, so this is the 11th, so they would have been in the thick of the fight right now. And so I know some people would say, well, who cares, because that's
Evidently that's the way people think about it.
Well, the media does. But so you put it up on your Twitter feed, and, you got a lot of people and there's a few people that put out a tweet back to you. And this one was from Maureen Jones, and she said, my great uncle was wounded at Vimy about 3 weeks before the big battle. He was machine gunned in the leg and was laid out for 2 days and 2 nights. Imagine that. And then a guy, Bill at Rowdy No More. He said, my great-grandpa was shot there, hit twice but lived. A thick wallet filled with letters and pictures he kept in his breast pocket saved his life. I redirected the bullet, and my sister still has the wallet today.
Imagine that.
And then Bruce Talbot at Bruce Talbot said, my grandfather, Sergeant W.H. Talbot, was decorated at Vimy Ridge. And I think there was four Canadians won the Victoria Cross.
Well, they should have, and I can't say enough. And people are some people are listening to.
I don't think, you know, like I lived all my life north, like, you know, in the States and here in Canada, and then I went over with you. We went over to France to visit Vimy Ridge. I don't think if you haven't been over there and seen all the graves, I don't think you get a true perspective of how many people lost their lives.
I remember when we went over there, Sergeant Thomas William McKenzie, we went there first, and we went and it seemed like miles and miles of young men.
Yeah, and all in their like mid-20s.
Mid-20s, gave their life, and I thought, and that's what got me fired. And I kept, and you know, Tim, I made a mistake. I went to the cemetery first, and I didn't quite get the feel I should have. At Vimy, but boy, what a monument they have over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody's ever seen it.
I know you shouldn't talk about this, but during World War II, the Germans were directed not to bomb it or not to wreck it.
You know? And because there's nothing on it with a rifle or you know, and...
it's just, it's not like a war memorial. It's just a memorial to the dead, and all the Canadian soldiers that were wounded, their names are engraved on these huge granite stones.
And I care, and I know a lot of people care out there, and Vimy Ridge, and thank you, Candice, for putting that in. Not too many. Sergeant Thomas William McKenzie was killed in that war, in the First World War, and my grandfather, Pelham Mountain, he was 31 years old. He had a family. He didn't have to go over, and that's the way the Canadians used to be.